Hey guys, it's Mark Potter again. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Channeling content and connections, Conduit Incorporated is designed for your custom content needs for all of your community building activities, specifically with custom designed content. Contact www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, today's guest is a gentleman by the name of Randall Laveau. He is the marketing practice lead at Sales Benchmark Index. And if you have a chance, you've got to check out this company. They are doing the best work around sales practice, alignment with sales and marketing, and emerging best practices. Randall is a smart guy. And when you listen to him, you'll hear how smart he is. But he's also got great background in sales. And so now he's got the enviable task of meeting with C-suite executives all over the country and talking specifically about sales strategy, alignment of their marketing platform. And he's learned a great deal, and he's got a unique perspective on what it takes to sell in this day and age and what you all should be incorporating into your businesses today. And he makes no apologies that doesn't matter the size of your company. This is the kind of stuff that can get done. So I am really, really excited about my conversation with him. I'm really excited for you guys to listen to it. And without further ado, here's Randall Laveau of Sales Benchmark Index. Randall.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Hanging in there, you know, beautiful day in North Carolina. Where are you? You know, you're usually all over the map. Where are you today?
I'm in Tampa, Florida.
Are you really?
Which I may have you beat in terms of a beautiful day.
It is
pretty nice here.
Yeah. I think, this is a great time of year, you know, it's, I don't know. Although it'll start to get really hot. So you're traveling a lot. You still traveling like a dog?
Oh yeah, 4 or 5 days a week.
Really? But you dig that. You and I talked before. You dig that, right?
Yeah, you know, it's you do it while you're young, so you don't have to do it while you're older. Is what my mentors have told me. So right. I'm trying to embrace that and racking up the miles. Gonna take my family on a nice vacation this summer, so it's all worth it.
That's actually pretty good. You know, I'm getting older, and I traveled. It's funny you say that because even though I think of it as just yesterday, I traveled like a madman. I traveled all over the world. I remember I lived in Los Angeles. I commuted to Atlanta for probably 18 months. You know, I've done a lot of traveling, and when you get older, you start to think about, you know, I don't really want to do this anymore. It's, you know, things start to hurt a little bit more. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But it does actually drive home. I mean, the people who do it like you, it drives home this idea that, you know, you've got to have deeper connections. I mean, it's still important to get face to face and meet with people, but it's harder than ever before, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I were stuck behind a desk or in a cubicle, you know, our business thrives on emerging best practices. And there's nothing like understanding an emerging best practice better than getting in front of it, seeing how it works, talking to the people who are developing them. So it's nothing replaces this face-to-face or belly-to-belly communication.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you about that, but let me do this. Let me ask you about Sales Benchmark. Tell me, let's do the little promo, if you will. Tell me about your organization first.
Yeah, so we are a business management consulting firm, and we specialize in sales and marketing. And we have a unique methodology called the RGM. And it's a management method used to accelerate the rate of growth. So for companies that are looking to grow their revenue faster than their competitors in industry, it's really important to follow a structured methodology.
Mm-hmm.
And it really accelerates revenue growth by getting the functional strategies of sales, marketing, and product into alignment with the CEO's strategy. So you're able to achieve sustainable growth versus just kind of being in the right place in the right time, more of the opportunistic growth that tends to fizzle out very quickly if there's not a methodology or a strategy built around it.
That seems pretty logical, you know, mm-hmm. I'm being facetious in that because I think as soon as you said that, I thought, my gosh, there's so many companies, you know, especially a lot of the ones that I've come in contact with in the printing industry, for example, that alignment of sales and marketing, alignment with the CEO's objectives is one thing, but then having kind of a structure and organization around that, because really what they've historically done, and I'm sure there's many businesses like this, they've said, look, I'm going to hire salespeople and go out and do the best you can, right? Here's what we sell and come back to me with orders. And that's kind of the way it's been. And that doesn't play well, does it?
No. I mean, there's a number of different ways. And, you know, we build business cases for organizations all the time around, you know, what direction they should go. And what we walk into most of the time is executives land in the right place at the right time, and they're able to temporarily grow the top line.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this results in the 2-year, stay at an organization, and then they start bouncing around from company to company. And all the while, that company is left to pick itself back up and, you know, trying to find the next best executive to come in and essentially repeat the same process or be set up for failure.
Right.
The truly great growth executives don't rely on luck and timing. And, you know, they really exceed their revenue targets regardless of the circumstances. And so it's about, you know, perpetual growth, making your number all the time. And that's why we tend to gravitate towards these special executives and, you know, take the B player executive and turn them into the A player executive.
So your job is truly, you're targeting the executives who have sales kind of under their tutelage. That's as opposed to, hey, let me go talk to the sales force and say, here, we're implementing these best practices. You're starting at the top and saying, you know, here are the practices that you have to put in place and I need a champion internally. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's recently, actually, over the last 2 years, we've been spending a majority of our time with the C-suite. So whether it's the CEO, CMO, CSO being chief sales officer or head of product, those are the people that we really tend to spend most of our time with initially. And then obviously we're an execution-based consultancy, so we'll work with those folks who are very tactical.
Mm-hmm.
But we talk about that a lot, that the best in class, you know, growth companies perfectly blend strategy and execution. And,
yeah.
And strategy is really about allocating people, money, and time to build buyer preference for, your company's products or services. And when you're able to take the strategy and blend it with the tactics, you have a recipe for success.
Yeah. And talk to me about timing, though, because the big thing, if you're talking to the C-suite, the number one thing, I assume you get this all the time, and from your role, and I want to ask you about that in a minute here, too, but the C-suite's going to say, all right, Randall, you know what, I need this to pay off, and I need it to pay off like right now. I need ROI today. Do you talk to them a little bit about expectations? My guess is that you guys have a structure and you say, look, this is going to pay off. But I mean, do you have to play a little bit with say, look, you've got to invest in this. You have to let the process take its, I mean, is that a hurdle that you have to get over?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've yet to meet a senior executive that doesn't want results yesterday.
Right.
That's the, you know, probably the most common thing. And obviously there's tactical things that you could do to get those quick catalytic wins. Mm-hmm. But you shouldn't be ignorant to the fact that if you don't have a strategy, which a strategy is doing the right things, then your tactics, which are doing those things right, are going to fall flat eventually. And you're going to be left, you know, wondering when I'm going to be able to grow revenue, when I'm going to be able to get ahead of my competition and essentially be successful.
Let me quick take a tangent here and ask you, all right, so your role, what's your role at the organization and how did you come, you know, give me a little of the Randall bio, if you will.
Yeah. So here at SBI, I am the marketing practice lead. So I oversee marketing for all of our clients. I guess my focus is staying ahead of the curve, growing faster than the industry, growing faster than our customers' competitors, helping them adopt those emerging best practices. Mm-hmm. We use that term a lot because we look at it in three different ways. You could either have standard operating procedures, which are things that if you don't have, you will see a revenue decline.
Mm-hmm.
You could have best practices, which your competition is likely adopting these best practices. That's why they're considered best practices. You will merely just maintain or catch up with your competition. Emerging best practices are things that the top 22% of the organizations we see are adopting today. Tomorrow they will be best practices. So it's important to grasp onto these and determine, do you want to leapfrog your competition or do you just merely want to play catch up? And mm-hmm. So that's what I focus my time on is helping organizations understanding what those emerging best practices are. I've been in marketing for the last 10 years. The 5 years prior to that, I was a successful sales executive. Everything from smiling and dialing on the telephones to managing key accounts in the financial services industry, and actually carved out a little niche for myself in marketing, was able to blend the idea of marketing shouldn't be on one side and sales is on the other side. So having that sales background really helped me think from a marketing perspective with the mind of a salesman and what would be most important to them. So that's really how I've been able to grow my career rapidly over the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a pretty sweet, you're in a sweet spot, you know? I mean, you've got, because this is a problem, right? The alignment of sales and marketing is an age-old problem. And it wasn't that long ago where they just basically said, look, marketing, you're sales support, and that's it. Even though the textbook said it was much different, it's just the way it was. And now, I have a couple questions for you in terms of what marketing's role. I mean, marketing's role has changed. I mean, it really takes a lot more of the sales funnel. And it used to be, especially obviously in the B2B space, you'd say, hey, all right, salesperson, go out, make your calls, like you said, smile and dial. And from the top of the funnel on down, that was the recipe. And with you talking about structure and all this kind of stuff that I want to get into, but marketing is now owns more of that role. And part of it has got to be the way we all buy. You know, you see this and you're flying all over the place and you're talking to these executives and you've lived it, right? Because you've got this successful selling career, then now it's transforming into this marketing. So you're in this sweet spot where you see all this. So tell me I'm not crazy that the way we buy has so dramatically changed that marketing now has a much different role, does it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and the B2C industry has really changed this. So you think to anything that you do as a consumer, whether you're looking for movies on Netflix or you're buying groceries or home goods on Amazon, these companies have perfected their understanding of their target market and their buyers. So you put something in your shopping cart, automatically something is queued up behind it as something that they anticipate that you'll like. And we're used to that as consumers. And it's no different in the B2B world. In fact, there's a lot of people using the term B2I, business to individual, because we don't sell to businesses, we sell to people. Yeah. And you know, we can't be ignorant to the fact that you know, when someone leaves the office and their day job, they are consumers still. And they're affected by the way that companies are marketing to them and selling to them. And so we take that into the B2B world. You know, businesses for so long, it's been sales, kind of power dialing or smiling and dialing, cold calling. And the reality of that is no one buys that way anymore. No one likes to feel like they're sold to. People want to make an informed decision. They start their buyer's process before that pesky sales rep ever dials them out of the blue and tries to interrupt them to spend money with them. So marketing really has to do its due diligence to understand who that buyer is, what their preferences are, what that their individual buying journey looks like, and establish their marketing strategy around that, so they could set up their sales reps for success, and you could really approach that consultative sale, which is going to lead to you know, higher growth and more revenue.
Yeah, and so I mean, I totally agree. So when you're talking to these CEOs, and you're walking in there and you're saying, "Look, the world has changed, and we in the B2B space buy more like individuals, and we're all cocooning ourselves, and we need to have intimate relationships with the brands. There's something deeper that has to happen." And so how do you balance that? Because I struggle with this. You're walking in and you're saying, look, you've got to have structure. You've got to have, standard operating procedures. You got to, obviously, best practices. And then we've got to talk about emerging best practices. We've got to have all of this. And the CEO's going, "Hey, this sounds great, Randall. I love it, you know, but I want it to pay off tomorrow. And, you know, tell me about the data." And yet, at the same time, we live in this world of noise, and you're flying around and engaging in a personal level. How do you balance that? Because here's this person who's saying, "Give me data, give me the ROI, I'll take your structure." But at the same time, you can't really automate that personal touch. Are you still talking about that? And I guess, for the listeners, I would love to hear a little bit more. When you talk about structure and process, you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You're not saying, "Hey, that intimacy, that connection," you're not throwing that away, but there's some things that can help you get there, right?
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, you have to know what the revenue targets are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not every organization is privately held. Some are beholden to a board, you know, investors or shareholders. So understanding what the growth target is for that quarter, for that year, and you know, that big, hairy, audacious goal that organization has over the next 5 to 10 years, it's important to get grounded in that. And then you start going through the process of understanding, is it realistic? And we typically do this in three ways. So by understanding the market, what is the sweet spot in the market? And to do this, you need to take into account, you know, are you in a share, exposure, expansion market? What is the competition doing? Where is the white space for your organization? Mm-hmm. Once you understand that white space and what that sweet spot is, you start to look at the accounts. So I know the revenue target. I know the goal for the quarter of the year. Are there enough accounts within this sweet spot? for me to hit this target? And do I even know who all of these accounts are? And this is where it starts getting down to brass tacks.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about an actual number of accounts, not saying, you know, there's 50,000 companies out there that could potentially buy from me. Well, some of those are owned by your competitors. Some of those are in lengthy contracts. Some of those, you know, will not sustain their growth for the long term. So when we get down to it, in your sweet spot, how many accounts actually exist that you could sell to, which would be your serviceable addressable market. After that, you know, do we understand the buyers within those accounts? Are they all the same? Have we developed buyer personas? Do we know the ins and outs of them? Do they make individual, you know, dictatorship type of decisions, or is there a consensus process that needs to be built in order to get them to say yes to your product or service? Once you understand that, it all becomes clearer for that executive. You know, I'm either set up in the right way or I haven't even asked myself these questions yet, and I better start. Unless I want my competition to start advancing or growing faster than me.
And how do you do this? So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's compelling on so many levels, and for whatever you're selling, or whether you're sitting in the executive suite or if you're an individual salesperson, how do they get that information? What's the best way? You know, clearly, you've got to have conversations, but if you're saying, look, I've got the number, now I've got to talk about more about what my target market is, and there are variables. So you're talking about checking certain boxes or certain, let's start defining the clientele, and how do you, what are great ways to get to that information?
Yeah. So in terms of the market, it's really a deep understanding of the competition. You know, have you done a competitive analysis recently? You know, most companies go through a brand audit. They go through an internal talent audit every so often, typically at an annual basis. But they leave out the competitive analysis, understanding who they're actually going up against. So we recommend a competitive analysis. And this helps you understand your total available market. And then once you understand that, you start to bring it down a level and say, competition owns X percentage of the marketplace. This leaves this white space for me based on my products and services. I can effectively sell into X percentage of it, which will give me my serviceable addressable market. Mm-hmm. And we have a proprietary method of formulations and algorithms that help define exactly what that sweet spot is.
Okay.
And then for accounts, it's simply saying, now you know what direction the arrow is pointing. It's a heck of a lot easier to go in there and understand exactly who these accounts are, you know, in terms of their annual revenue, their geographical location, you know, and this is going to impact things far beyond just understanding, are you set up the right way? But, you know, how should your sales force actually deploy their reps? How should you draw the territory lines? Where should you spend money in terms of your events from a marketing perspective? All of these things kind of come out of getting this information from markets and accounts. And then buyers, the only way to do that is to get out in front of your buyers.
Right.
So we see as an emerging best practice, customer success teams within organizations who really understand, you know, what is the buyer preference? What is the trends within the industry? How are the buyers changing their decision-making process? And we also recommend win-loss, no-decision interviews, things that you could do right now within your accounts to understand, you know, if I lost this opportunity that was in Salesforce or my CRM, I was forecasting it. It was in the pipeline. I was anticipating this revenue. I lost it. It's one thing to lose it. It's another thing to know why you lost it. And so you could actually get smarter through your failures if you can kind of follow that thread all the way through and don't give up on it.
Yeah.
That's going to make you a better executive and a better organization.
Gosh, and it doesn't apply to just big organizations, does it? I mean, I when you're sitting there, and I'm sitting there and thinking about a lot of these printers across the country, they just have no sophistication to chronicling their business. And when you say, you know, win, loss, no decision interviews, heck, especially when you've got commission-based salespeople out there, they're not dumping the stuff back into a central place, a central library that says, you know, we're starting to track where, even just from a number standpoint, I bid this, I lost it. I bid this, I won it. All right, so we're starting to know where pricing is falling. And so this does not just apply to the big guys. It applies to, these are just disciplines and that they could use to make them smarter about the market and the business. And it's really kind of amazing, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure you come across a lot of people, you kind of go, guys, this is pretty straightforward stuff. We've just got to implement the process here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a word of caution there. And I'm sure some people will be listening to this saying, oh, we know that, you know, the rep goes into Salesforce and they choose from a drop down list as to why they lost the deal. Right. And that's my win, loss, no decision data. And that's so wrong in so many ways, how that information and data could be skewed.
Right.
It's not objective. And that's why this, you know, I referred to the customer success team. You know, you either have an outside person do it from the organization or a customer success team. Someone who is totally objective, is independent of that sales process. Otherwise, you get to the point where it's either price, it was too expensive, it's product, the product isn't good enough. If you have this independent, objective voice reaching out to the customer or prospect, understanding the why in terms of their decision, you're going to get down to the root cause of it and be able to make educated decisions versus just flying off the handles and saying, oh, we need to lower our price or we need to dump a bunch of money into product and fix that. You want to make sure that you're doing it the right way. Another thing I want to point out to your audience is that you are falling into a constraint-based thinking trap if you think that you're too small to start doing these things, to build an effective strategy, to align your organization. In fact, after meeting with hundreds of companies in the Fortune 1000, I could tell you with confidence today that the smaller organization is at a complete advantage because they can be nimble, they can be agile. It doesn't take moving a mountain in order to get a decision across the desk of the CEO. So embrace that if you're a smaller organization and you feel like you're behind, that you have a clear advantage over the big guys because you can actually make change and make it quickly and see results almost instantaneously.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Listening to you, I get a little goose pimply because I think that you and you know, obviously you've been gracious enough to speak at our event and your company embody, I think, where we're at. I think there's been so much noise. It's just listening to you say, listen, be careful, right? You can, data can get fairly antiseptic and things aren't black and white, and which means and which says it's a great thing, right? It says we need intimate relationships. We need deeper connections. And that might mean that, hey, there is going to be a customer success team and we are going to go out and ask them questions. Sure, we'll have that data as support, but we want to get to those real meaningful conversations. And you know, I think about, and I know you guys do a lot with content as well. I'm a big believer. You know, I'm certainly biased, but I wouldn't be doing if I didn't believe this. And that is that the publishing process is a little bit of that. You know, when I go out and I talk to people, it's easy. It's non-selling. It's non-threatening. And it's a safe way for me to go out and simply understand what's important to them and tell stories. You know, you marry that with some data, and then you've got some real stuff to work with. And I that's kind of the new way of selling is that, you know, maybe, I don't know, do you think maybe that the answer of all is on the other side of all this noise is to say, yes, data is important, but there's still this best practice stuff that says you've got to go out and connect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so organizations are fall into one of three categories typically. You are a product company. You know, think of like a Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
You have a plethora of products out there. You are a price company. So you could just beat anyone out on price, mm-hmm. No matter what it is. Or you're a client intimacy company.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a share market or saturated market that has lots of competition, and I think of, you know, the audience that you speak to,
mm-hmm.
In terms of it's been around a long time. There's some behemoths in the industry, mm-hmm. some people that have always been there. The buyers are well educated in terms of knowing who the vendors are out there. You need to separate yourself with the way that you sell and the way that you go to market. And by understanding with empathy what that buyer is going through and the fact that they know they have to make a decision, you know, every year on a vendor, and they know who those vendors are, they're going to want to do it with people that they enjoy talking to, that they feel empower them to make an educated decision. No one wants to feel like they've been sold something or that they've been cornered into a sale.
Yeah.
So if you take a stand and say, we are going to be a customer-centric organization, we're going to put the customer at the core of everything that we do, I mean, right then and there, you're going to separate yourself from your competition and start to win more deals.
Yeah, I do. I believe you're so right. That's why it's so exciting that you're with that organization and in that role. So a couple things, a couple more questions before I let you go. So you talked about standard operating procedures. Then you talked about best practices. Then you talked about emerging best practices. Give me examples of each of those so that we can, you know, standard operating procedure, which, look, there's a lot of companies that don't have those in place. And so what are some basic things that they should have in place and most companies do? And then the best practices are, you know, what good companies are obviously doing and keeps you kind of, like you said, on the competitive level. And then maybe give us you gave us kind of that customer success team, which I like. Maybe a little another example or elaborate on that one a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really depends, you know, which area. So, you know, from a marketing perspective, a standard operating procedure would be the fact that I am utilizing both outbound and inbound campaigns.
Okay.
You know, I have a database, a clean database, where I understand how many contacts are in it. I'm sending out campaigns. I'm tracking the opens, the clicks. I have a well-defined website that's easy to navigate for the buyer. You know, these are the core tenets. Mm-hmm. If you have a marketing department and you are executing on marketing, meaning you have a marketing automation system, you have a CRM system, you're building content, you have the standard operating procedure.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that have been in place, you know, within the industry for the last 10 years. And if you don't have them, I mean, and you're listening today, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. You're already falling behind. Now, a best practice is you look around to your competition and you see what they're doing differently.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're attending trade shows with a different sort of strategy.
Right.
They have better demos that they're offering within their sales cycles that the marketing department's building. You know, when you're going through navigating the website, you know, they're taking you to very effective landing pages, and they're progressively profiling you, asking you new questions every time you download a piece of content. Or you're taking your content a step further, and you're starting to provide thought leadership. You know, these are things you're probably seeing your competitors doing, and it's a good idea to get there because you want to maintain pace with your competition. You don't want them to advance too far ahead of you, but you're not going to stand out in the marketplace by doing these things. You're merely going to catch up or stay in pace with your competition.
Right.
Now, emerging best practices is really taking on the agile approach. And this is done by having an objective-based marketing design. So your organizational structure is set up so that every silo or every department has an objective that's helping to achieve the marketing number, which in and of itself is a best practice.
Right.
We've seen sales organizations for years have a number on their head, and they've got to hit this quarterly number and this annual number, while marketing kind of just stands in the sideline. You know, goes to a couple of trade shows, maybe, you know, gets a couple ads and an industry publication, whatever it may be, and really has no responsibility in terms of driving revenue. So having a number on the head of the marketing department to say the attribution coming out of the marketing department is going to equal this in either pipeline or actual revenue, that is in and of itself an emerging best practice. And then something I spoke at on your at one of your events last year, account-based marketing.
Right.
You know, we're still at the top of the hype cycle with that. It's something that the companies are not adopting to as quickly as they should in the SMB and mid-market. The enterprise accounts or organizations, they're absolutely doing this today.
Okay.
And account-based marketing is essentially marketing to the accounts that matter most to your sales organization. So taking that data out of the markets, accounts, and buyer segmentation that I spoke to earlier, mm-hmm. and creating individual hyper-personalized, hyper-customized campaigns for those accounts. That in and of itself is the essence of being customer-centric and customer-focused.
And so, that was kind of one of my questions I was going to ask you about account-based marketing. And because we do hear about that, and you're right, it's getting hyped up and people are talking about it. But in its simplest form, I mean, there's a great deal of alignment in that. There's someone who, you know, back in the day, 30 years ago, a guy walks in, he's going to try to sell, and he's sticking his head everywhere. In fact, he probably had the run of a building, and he could walk in and stick his head around to the CFO's office or the CMO and maybe talk to the estimator. He could go to all these different people in the building. And obviously in today's world, that just doesn't happen, let alone can you get in the building. So now if you've got a relationship, it's still kind of an alignment of that sales person or sales group. But it is kind of getting a little bit, like you said, a hypersensitive with your marketing to the rest of that building. Is that right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, think about it from a salesperson's perspective. If my marketing team is using traditional methods of marketing, which I would use the analogy of fishing with a net, mm-hmm. they're casting this net out there. There's hundreds, thousands of fish that are going to go in this net. Well, only a handful of those fish actually matter to the sales team. But if I pull this net up and I dump all those fish in front of the sales rep, it actually hurts the sales rep. The numbers game is no longer a good thing. It actually drives down activity efficiency. And you're giving your sales rep more at-bats, but the likelihood of them being successful is drastically reduced. Mm-hmm. Versus if I'm a marketer and I'm going out there with a spear and I talk with my sales rep beforehand and they say, you know what, these five counts, these are what I'm focused on today. And I go out with a spear, forget the net, and throw that spear at those, you know, five fish and mm-hmm. put those in front of the sales rep's desk. Not only is their probability of success going to go up, but the average sales price is likely going to increase because we know the most about this account. We could speak from a customer intimacy perspective, the best to them. The velocity of the sales cycle is going to increase. I'm not going to need, you know, the traditional 3, 6, 12 months in order to close the account once I engage them from a marketing perspective. And of course, the win rate is going to go up, because if I close, you know, 2 out of those 5 accounts versus 2 out of the 1,000 accounts that I tried to drop on the sales rep's desk, I'm going to be able to repeat that process at scale and gain the confidence of the sales department, which is going to just bring the alignment together. There's no longer going to be that wall between sales and marketing, and you're going to be a much more effective organization by doing that.
It's really interesting, Randall, that you know, I think it's probably one of the most compelling things in our this day and age, and that is that what we've talked about earlier is that your marketing shares or owns a lot more of the funnel than they ever did before. Like I said, it used to be, hey, sales rep, go out and here you go. And today, you know, people don't want to see people, right? They don't want people knocking on their doors. They don't want them cold calling. And they want to, in fact, they want to engage with people that they know and trust already. It's that old, hey, 2/3 of the buying process is complete before human interaction takes place. They have to kind of choose you. And so that puts the onus on something else to grab their attention, establish trust. We had a guest on here who talked a lot about safety, you know, making people feel safe. That's what the world, you know, you're a father, and that's kind of the world we live in. And people want that. So it's really interesting, because when you talk about account-based marketing, it is. It's almost nurturing that relationship and making it feel safe and warm and trusting. And then eventually, yes, you do hand it over, and that salesperson is just an extension of that. Is that, in essence, I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, if you're sitting back today waiting for an account to come to you, the reality is, and there's studies done not only by us, but a bunch of other organizations out there that say if a person is reaching out to a vendor, they're more than 50% of the way through their decision-making process. I mean, you think, going back to the B2C example, how you make a decision to buy a car.
Yeah.
I don't know a single person that just walks into the first dealership they see and says, show me all the cars that you have. Tell me what I should buy.
Right.
You go in there, you've done your research, you understand what you want, you know, the type of car, all the things that come with it. And you're really just there to have the sales rep facilitate the sale for you. Mm-hmm. It's no different in the B2B world. And the companies that do the best in selling cars, or if you translate that to B2B, into selling their services and products, are the ones that reach out and are able to engage without being in your face and through a face-to-face conversation, engage that buyer by understanding them, propping up the specifics of the product or services that mean the most to them. And when you do that, not only when people come to you, they will be more inclined to actually buy from you versus just leveraging you to drive the price down for someone else that they're already engaged with. But you'll actually be able to engage them quicker. You'll be able to value sell. You'll then be able to value price, and you'll be able to just build better relationships, which is going to make happier customers, reduce your churn rate, all of the above. It's all about putting the customer at the center of everything you do.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Let me end with this. So tell me how they find out, how do people find out more about Sales Benchmarks and get in touch with you guys?
Yeah. So, our website, salesbenchmarkindex.com, we actually set it up in such a way that you're able to select if you're a CEO, if you're a product guy, marketing, sales, whatever it may be, you get a customized experience when you come to the site. And then we have an app that is the best source of information. Not only do we have our podcast, video cast, we publish a daily blog. You're able to use that app to hear interviews from your peers on how they're actually going about some of these issues that they're having and tackling these challenges that they have. So there's no better way than to hear from someone that's facing the same challenge that you are and has the same situation, hearing how they've personally overcome it. So I recommend the app, go to the website. And of course, you know, we're able to come out and do assessments for organizations, help give them an understanding of where to point that arrow, how much wood to put behind it, and ultimately get that organization to experience the type of revenue growth, not only that they deserve, but that they plan for.
Man, it sounds awesome. I love it. I love listening to you. I mean, you're a smart guy and obviously a very smart organization. And maybe because I agree with it so passionately but I just think the world of it. And I'm going to be honest with you. I've been sitting here taking notes, like for me. I mean, the listeners, you know, hopefully they'll get something out of it, but I got a bunch out of it. I think it's really, really good stuff. Most importantly, so how old are your kids now?
They are 4 and 2. My son, who's 4, it's interesting, living in Atlanta, he's actually at his third season of T-ball, and it just ended this weekend on Mother's Day.
So oh, my, was, 4 years old, and he's already exciting. A three-year veteran?
Yeah, oh, it's amazing. He gets better every year, so it gets more and more exciting.
Dude, youth sports is a killer. You just wait. I mean, it is... You want to talk about a petri dish of learning or a laboratory. I mean, you watch, you know, people with the most near and dear thing to their hearts. I mean, it's obviously I've told you with youth hockey. I mean, I see parents and how they act. It's unbelievable, and it really does show you. But I think that's really cool. And you're gonna go grab some time with them in Florida this over the summer.
Oh yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
we're bringing them down here, and yeah, like awesome. You said, I mean, it, they always say marketing is a test in patience. I challenge that to watching a 4-year-old play T-ball. That is the biggest test of patience.
Oh my gosh,
which I've been well groomed for.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Well, listen, Randall, I just, you know what, when I'll let you know when I'm over there, and you're there, which is, you know, Pat, two ships passing in the night. We'll either grab a beer or a cup of coffee and catch up. But I just can't thank you enough. This is really great stuff. And I will reach out and we'll get together soon.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Safe travels.
All right.
See ya.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Randall Laveau, marketing lead for Sales Benchmark Index. I certainly did. I've got a page full of notes to prove it. And I'm not sure if we were able to keep track of all the salient points, but let's all agree that the day and age has changed. And to have best practices, standard operating procedures, some structure around the intimacy that we need to create is important. I think that's a really, really unique thing, that the world has changed so much that we collectively have to get more customer-centric. And Randall has got a great vantage point from his position at Sales Benchmarks and the fact that he's had the privilege to talk to all these C-suite people and get perspective on it is really, really cool. So I hope you gleaned the same kind of value that I did out of it, because I thought it was really, really great stuff. A reminder that this episode of Brushstrokes was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, where we channel content and connections. So for all your custom content needs and your community building activities, please visit www.conduit-inc.com. Again, my thanks to Randall for a great conversation, and certainly my thanks to all of you for listening. And until next time, this has been Brushstrokes.